Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and heard that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and heard that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way.
Music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word.
Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfuckers upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Self himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. This is a special edition. This is straight up in respect and in honor, and this show is dedicated to Troy Anthony Davis. May he rest in peace. And as he said, his soul and his spirit will live on forever. But this is a show unequivocally dedicated to Troy Davis and his struggle for liberation and justice, and the ongoing struggle for liberation and justice, especially right here in the bowels of the biggest cesspool of injustice and institutional racism and false propaganda man has ever known, and that is the U.S. of A. And so this episode is going to be wide open. We call people to tune in, to call in. If you're listening and you want to chime in, if you're listening live, obviously, and you want to chime in, and you have a take, if you have something that you want to say, your personal thoughts or comments in regards to the barbaric murder, the legal lynching that occurred yesterday, September 21st, 2011, in the state of Georgia. And I hear all these people saying, Georgia's a racist place. Georgia's really racist, man. Georgia. You know, of course that's going to happen in places like Georgia. Listen, that could happen anywhere in America, all right? That could happen anywhere in America. Not only was that state sponsored from the perspective of the state of Georgia, but that legal lynching last night that occurred that took the life of Troy Anthony Davis, that was complicity all the way to Washington, all the way to Capitol, all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That was complicity. That was complicity with his murder. And so this show is about justice. It is about fighting injustice, and that is why it's dedicated to Troy Anthony Davis, because that courageous man. Spent 20 years on death row. 20 years on death row, pretty much 20 years on death row. Not knowing when or if they were going to murder him for a crime that all indicators, for a while now have pointed that he is probably not the person that they were seeking. And I'll go out and I'll give my opinion, what I believe. I do not believe in any shape, form, or fashion that he committed the crime that they say he did. But beyond that, what I believe and what I think, the hardcore evidence, seven witnesses recanting what they had originally said, and five of those seven that recanted, you know, saying that they were coerced, enforced and pressed by rogue cops. And we know that police in America, they are sanctioned, and in many cases it is state sanctioned terror that they rain on black and brown communities throughout America. But so as I said before, this show is dedicated to Troy Davis. We got a lot of ground to cover. We got a lot of ground to cover, and I hope that, you know, people that wish to, that they feel compelled to call in, you know, please do so. Please do so. And I want to say this as we move forward. I want to say this, we can't just start rallying 2 weeks before some injustice happens in America and or is about to happen. You know, sometimes you don't know when injustices are going to happen. You know, such as, you know, when Oscar Grant and Sean Bell or Ayanna Stanley Jones, you know, see their last days by way of bullets from police officers. But in the case of these state-sponsored murders, these lynchings, these executions, we cannot start rallying 2 weeks or a month before. The work, all the people that rallied on behalf of Troy Davis, I think that this might be his wish, his sentiment, is that people would continue to fight on, that people would continue to fight vigorously on to end injustice. So we have to fight throughout the year. We have to fight day in and day out. We have to understand that various injustices, They are not mutually exclusive. They are connected in various shape, forms, and fashions. And we have to see that. We have to understand that. And we have to fight vigorously against these injustices. We have to be organized, and we have to be consistent. We have to be consistent, 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 and organize, 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 and it has to be day in and day out, because if we do not do that, I will almost guarantee you that there will be more and more Troy Davises. There will be more Troy Davises. There will be more Oscar Grants. There will be more Amadou Diallos. There will be more Timothy Stansberry. There will be more Patrick Dorsman. There will be more beautiful 7-year-old black queens like Ayanna Stanley Jones from Detroit, Michigan, that was killed by a police officer. Yes, that is news to you. Yes, a 7-year-old black girl was killed in the summer of 2010 by a Detroit police officer. And ask me if he's facing his death day. No, because I guess when it's state-sponsored terror, you can get away with murder. You can get away with murder. But state-sponsored terror, you can get away with murder. So, before we go on, I want to welcome, my co-pilot, co-host, Andrea Zamudio on. And then we'll get going. I see some people already on the switchboard. And so, that's good. Those of you that are on hold, hold on tight. I will be, passing you through to get your feedback and your opinions and your comments about Troy Davis, and hopefully you can broaden it, to looking at the scope of, there's far too many people are thinking that this is isolated, man. This is what America does. America does many things well, and most of the things that America does well, I don't like, because one of the things that America does well, they do real well. They kill black and brown people real well. They do it good. They do it right here in the U.S., and then they do it abroad. They do it abroad, through perilous wars. Oh, they do it well. They do it real well. They do exploitation well. They do institutional racism well. They do state-sponsored and manufactured propaganda, false propaganda well. They do it well. So, Andrea, what are your heartfelt, visceral thoughts regarding this lynching that occurred yesterday in the state of Georgia in 2011, a lynching? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first I want to start off by just saying that I pray for Troy's family. We send our condolences to them. I can't even begin to imagine the pain that they're going through right now. And I just hope that they're given the strength that they need and the support from the community. I know that them, as much as Troy, would want everyone to be organizing and not, to prevent from this a tragedy like this ever occurring again. I just think that it's really important that from this situation we take the fact that this is a systemic problem. The fact that, everything you mentioned about the case, all the, the doubt, And given that, why was it so necessary to, indict him and then convict him and put him on death row? And I think we have to see the root of a lot of these social problems is capitalism. It's about money, and so they will take any person for whatever reason if it makes some money, and it doesn't matter if you're going to take away someone's life. It's about getting revenge and about the money. And so I think that, it's really essential that individually we take the time to study these situations, study these social problems, and start to organize around creating whatever change we can. Because I feel like a lot of times, like you were saying, we're quick to react, and then we want to say that it's frustrating because these problems are too big. The prison industrial complex is too big. Ending, the death penalty is too big of a problem. Like, I can't do anything about that. But you can do something about that. You can contribute whatever you can to a movement. Because if everyone keeps saying they can't do anything, then nothing's ever going to change. And so if there's already organizations out there that have been working for years to create these changes, then you can start by getting to know those organizations, what progress they've made, what their, what their strategy is, and see how you fit into that.
Right.
That, yeah.
Right. And right alongside capitalism, because it's almost like one of those things, the chicken came before the egg. You know, you have a lot of these, white socialists and so-called communists, they put a lot of emphasis on whatever and saying, such and such. Well, also within the root of that is institutional racism and white supremacy. That is also embedded in the bedrock. And dare I say, I would even dare to say that, I mean, that, you know, capitalism is an evil, vile, vile thing, and the roots of institutional racism are as well. And there are some socialists out there as well that are institutional racists themselves and white supremacists in the way they think. So, but we have a call. We have a caller on right now, and I want to welcome them on with. See what your comments are. Caller, you're on line one. Can you hear me? Caller?
Am I the one that's on?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I've never called a radio before. Okay.
All right. Welcome. Welcome. You sound like a young person. Are you a college student?
Yes, I'm a college student at University of Maryland, College Park.
Okay, well, welcome on the show. What can we ask you? What are your thoughts, regarding, what happened last night, the legal lynching of, and especially, I think this is good that we have a young person on the show calling in, because oftentimes, especially within this generation, people don't think that young people have a take on social issues, and this is a core social issue that is connected to so many people and has so many different intersectionalities that run right through it. So I want to ask you, not just as a human being, are you of African ancestry?
Yes, I'm African American.
Yes. All right, and as an African American black woman and a human being, what are your thoughts based on what you saw last night, the legal lynching of this black man, Troy Davis, and whatever your thoughts are, the air is yours.
Well, I think the word that kind of comes to mind to me is tragic, because we hear a lot about unjust killings that have happened in the past before we were more advanced in technology, but just the fact that in the world I'm growing up in today, that this man who had so much doubt in his case was still executed, that someone decided that on his behalf, I think that's tragic. And it really just shows to me that much hasn't changed over the years, because in my black women's studies class today, I made the point that the concept of the lynching and hangings and electrocutions that were done in the past is still that we're watching people. Enforcing their power upon people who can't use their voices. And I feel it's very tragic that that hasn't changed, because the government is still a white, Christian, male group, and they don't represent the many faces and diversities of America, and yet they're still deciding whether someone can live or not, even though his case was filled with so much doubt. And I just think it's very tragic that it still continues today.
Right. You're right on with that. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, and you connecting it's a white, Eurocentric, male-dominated society that we live in here in the U.S. And the power is concentrated, just like the wealth is concentrated. So there's a lot of talk now about the unequal distribution of wealth in this country. But the power is concentrated as well. And unfortunately, far too many black and brown people look to the Democratic Party. And I'm not saying look to the Republican Party, certainly, but look to the Democratic Party as the savior. And it's very telling that, you know, the Democratic Party as a whole, you know, they weren't, you know, they don't have anything within their platform to attack and dismantle institutional racism as we know it. But you see, you know, there are third parties out there that people have no idea about that do tackle those things. You know, for instance, the Green Party, they mention those things. And so it's just, you know, but we're not supposed to know about these things. We're supposed to continue to be obsequious to the two-party system and as well as the media that continues to you know, promulgate those two parties as if that it's one or the other, and you must choose or pick one of these two limited options that, as you just said, are pretty much not in the best interest of a lot of us, especially those of us that are of color. What do you, as a young person, what do you feel that you can do, you know, on your campus and beyond with some of your peers in terms of whether it's, you know, conversations with them, having continuing dialogues, or even organizing on campus to put together, you know, some long-term actions, you know, and not letting Troy's death and murder be in vain. What are some of the things that you feel you can do?
Well, I feel the first thing that I think we can do is educate ourselves more. Like, I know I don't necessarily follow the news or current events as much as I should, but I'm taking steps to do that more and to use different sources to find out what's going on in the world. And I think talking, I always have conversations with my friends about issues that are going on. And just today at lunch, my friend, who's a government and politics major, didn't really see the significance of Troy Davis, and he kind of categorized it as like a black issue. But I calmly said to him that he's interested in international relations, and I calmly said to him that to look at how the U.S. treats outside countries and nations, you kind of have to look at how they treat the people inside their country. Like you can't separate the two, because before the U.S. was a superpower, you have to look at how they treated their citizens, because those same theories and concepts still carry on to the outside countries. And I just feel like they're being in a diverse campus, like University of Maryland, there's so many groups and ways to help the community, and PG County and D.C. and Baltimore. There's so many ways to, like, get involved, and that's what I'm doing this semester. And I'm getting involved in community service and things like that. So it's very, on this campus, I know it's very easy just to find a group that you can actually help the community around you and make small differences, like give someone a meal, or, you know, like clean up a park. It's very easy to do that.
Right, right. So yeah, those things. And if I might say, you know, you might want to, you know, because I think it's good that you're thinking about those things, and that's part of the process. One of the things you might want to think is with your friends, you know, and those that are willing, and you have to understand it's probably going to be a small group of you at first, and then, you know, it will grow, you know, hopefully exponentially, you know, year to year. But, you know, you have to, I think you should look at, you know, creating something that can be, you know, almost institutionalized, you know, on your campus, something that can be put in place, starting an organization that, you know, maybe an organization that is aimed at educating, you know, students about mass incarceration. You know, they have something like that at Howard, Students Against Mass Incarceration, something on your campus, you know, that has to do with even ending the death penalty and trying to link up with organizations that are in the state of Maryland, like, you know, Case Maryland, which is Maryland Citizens Against State Executions. So that's an organization right there in the state of Maryland that, you know, might, you know, lend their support behind you to start some kind of chapter like that on the college campus where you are, and building from there. And I think that would, you know, things like that is what you decide to work on. That's going to be your choice. But thinking of something that's going to have impact, that's socially relevant, and something that can be you know, set in place long after you graduate, but you can look back and say, hey, you know, I was a part of starting this organization, or I was a part of really enhancing this organization, you know, while I was at the University of Maryland. So, but I want to thank you for coming on the program, and you know, feel free, to come on anytime. Make sure that you add us as a friend on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll be inundated with every time our programs are coming up, and you're always welcome to come in. We call it Your World News because this is the people's radio, and so we always want you to feel like you have a place to come on and voice what you want to talk about or even report. I mean, we're looking to have student service as correspondents. So anytime you want to report on stuff that's happening on campus, or even stuff that's happening far away from your campus, you're always welcome. So can I ask you your name?
Cece.
All right. Well, so nice to meet you, and welcome to the Your World News family. I think that your comments and what you're planning to do. I think Troy Davis is up above, smiling on those kind of statements and that kind of sentiment and those kind of actions. And I think that's one of the best ways that we can honor the life of Troy Davis,
yeah,
along with the life of other martyrs like Dr. King and Malcolm X and so many others. So thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. Andre, that was a good call. So we're gonna, that was a great call. It's always nice to hear, a young person really kind of, articulate themselves and thinking about things outside of themselves. Thinking about the bigger issues. So, but we have somebody else that's also on the line. So we're gonna, which is good. So we'll welcome them on and. Caller, can you hear us?
Hello.
You're online too? Yes, you're online too? Yeah, I can hear you. We can hear you.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay.
Hello,
hi
everyone.
Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. You're on with Solomon Andrea. This is Your World News, and Andrea, I'm gonna let Andrea, ask you a question. That's going to really inaugurate you and welcome you onto the show. Andrea, can you hear? All right. Caller, are you still with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Well, I think we lost Andrea on our other line. But I just want to ask you. Hello?
Hello?
I can kind of hear a lot of stuff in the background. So, but I want to ask you, what are your thoughts regarding what happened last night with the murder of Troy Anthony Davis?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that I am highly, highly upset about this entire case. My condolences are to the families, both of the families, Troy Davis families, and still, the police officer that was killed about 22 years ago. And based off of what recently happened, I believe that I feel that racism is still really embedded in our nation. I feel as though at a certain extent, like, our progress isn't really doing anything. In our Black Women's Studies class today, I expressed that, the man, like, there was no proof against him. So I believe that, the least they could have done was wait and see if they could find some proof instead of just ending his life like that. Because no one deserves to have their life taken away, for no reason. Like, he didn't deserve to die. And, I'm overly upset about what recently happened yesterday.
Right. Thank you. I couldn't agree with you more. I think, Andrea, you have a question for our caller?
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is that, this is, it's not only that, some of us might be opposed to the death penalty, others may not, but what's worse with the situation is that his guilt hadn't been proven, right? And so do you see this as, like an isolated case, or do you feel like this is representative of a bigger, systemic problem in the criminal justice system?
I definitely believe that this is not an isolated case, that he's definitely a representative of many African-American men and women who's been in this predicament. And I think that this has been definitely going on for decades. And having this happen yesterday really opened my eyes to the fact that, like, this is really not okay. And I'd really like to think about what we can do, but at the same time, it makes me question, how effective will it be? Will it change authorities' perspectives about how they treat African Americans in the incarceration system? So I definitely think that this was a representative of, similar situations that happened before.
Right.
Have you thought about anything in particular that you think you would like to do or start to do to?
Well, I'm thinking about at least some of my shirts tomorrow. I would like to, write, "This is Troy Davis," because we hear things that happen to other people, but we never think it's going to happen to us. But for some reason, this case, it really touched me in a way where I felt like, wow, this could have been my father. This could have been my uncle. So, like, this really hit home for me. And so I think it's definitely important to, educate other people and make sure that they're aware of what really happened. Because
absolutely,
when you ask around, some people don't even know what happened. Like, they just know his name, but there's no story behind it.
Yeah. And that's something, this morning and I guess late last night, I was just looking around different websites, and the way, a lot of mainstream media outlets were portraying it was just like, so-and-so was, executed. And there's no, story at all behind, there was doubt or who was Troy Davis and how long, who was his family. And so I think that that speaks volumes to, how the corporate media purposefully dehumanizes people so that people have no context and they're just like, oh, well, all I know is that he got convicted for murdering a police officer and anyone who does that deserves whatever they got, so whatever. I'm not going to concern myself with that. But on some other, alternative media sites, you do hear, his sister speaking out and telling, the story of the 20 years that they fought to try to save his life. And I think that, if you're going to put the voices of, the officer's family, which, it's fine, I think that other people, his family also deserved a voice, and his story should have also been told, especially in a situation like this where it wasn't proven that he was guilty.
Right.
Right.
I definitely agree.
So thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
All right. No, and keep up the work. Keep up the work. Make that information, front and center. I just gotta let you know that before you go. It's a daunting, and folks that are, because I heard you say that you were a college student. I'm just assuming you said you took a women's black study course. It's really imperative for you to continue to fight that good fight in terms of the propaganda front and getting, actual factual propaganda out there so that your peers, those around you, And I think that, you know, if you did write that in your shirt, you know, it's going to cause some people to ask you the question, like, what, you know, what is that? What's that? You know, what's that shirt about? Why are you still wearing that? And you can get into some stuff. And some of the things that you know, you can start to verse your friends, you know, and your classmates about is like, and I think you said it, is the things about, you know, the prison industrial system, or, you know, the prison industrial complex, where, you know, we have, you know, prison corporations like CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, and GEO Group, you know, on the stock market and, you know, making literally billions of dollars on incarcerating human beings. And the vast majority of them are of color. And, you know, the U.S. is the most prison populous nation in the world. So the U.S. does that well, and they execute people well. So these are great conversation components. And you can, you know, do the world a great deal of good by educating, you know, as they say, each one teach one, by educating, you know, friends closer to you, maybe even family members, and then starting there. So, you know, I want to echo what Andrea said. You know, thank you for calling in, and you're always welcome on Your World News. Hopefully that you continue to track our show, and anytime you want to come on and call in and, you know, get stuff off your, you know, off your mind, and or even report on something that is underreported, you know, you could do so. We're looking for correspondents everywhere. You know, that's the way we look at our listeners, is you're all potential correspondents. So thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
All right. Andrea.
Yes.
Andrea, you still with me? Yeah. We lost you for a second earlier. But we have another caller. We have another caller. So this is good. Caller, you're on line three now. You have some questions, comments about Troy Davis or anything related to that? Caller, can
Hello?
You hear us? Line?
Can
yes.
You hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay,
you're
how you
on
doing?
Your World News. Welcome. We're doing well. Well, as well as can be, considering where we live and considering that we're waist deep in a cesspool of injustice, but. You know, the struggle continues. So, but welcome on the show. What would you like to talk about related to Troy Davis and you know, those type of things?
Well, one of the things that I want to say. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you well.
Okay, one of the things that I wanted to say was I'm a black man screaming, and so. I'm just coming alongside to support you in what you're talking about tonight, and I wanted to share something in terms of my thoughts from one of our ancestors that kind of broke it down and to let us kind of know that, you know, in agreement with what the statement you made earlier, that a lot of times we come to the battle too late. See, some people get caught up in the ease and the comfort, and he said that I'm not going to live a life of ease and comfort and respectability. But I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to fight for the sake of my brothers, and I'm going to suffer with them. I'm going to toil with them. I'm going to endure insult with them. I'm going to undergo outrage with them. I'm going to lift up my voice on behalf of them. I'm going to speak and write for their vindication. I'm going to struggle in their ranks for their emancipation. And that was Brother Frederick Douglass that wrote that. And we're talking about over 100 years ago that the brother wrote that piece, but it's still true today about the things that are going on. What upsets me more than anything else, and I didn't expect the outcome to be any different. Because I understood that a lot of us came to the battle kind of late. I've talked about this issue on my show several times, and with no response. And what bothered me more than anything else was that we saw a massive amount of people show up to Jenna, okay, because somebody was upset about somebody sitting underneath them damn tree. But here you have a beautiful black brother, okay, who represents every one of us, and there wasn't the same outrage. There wasn't the same massive outrage and outpouring of people to address this issue. And that's what bothered me. And then the other thing is, we have to have people that are organized, like you said before, brother, in the beginning of the conversation, to attack these issues, not coming to them late, but be ready to be in advance, because the philosophy and the plan that goes down is already understood how they're going to do stuff way in advance. They're looking at stuff 30 years down the road, and we ain't even looking at it at tomorrow.
You're right. You sound familiar. This is Maurice Carver, right?
Yes, my brother. You know, he called up in New York City talking to me, man.
What's going on? I'm a big fan of yours. Executive producer for Black Men Screaming in New York City, based out of Brooklyn, New York. Maurice, it's good to hear you on the show. You said something yesterday that, and I was wondering if you could kind of bestow upon our listeners, including myself. You said something about targeted action to the state of Georgia. You know, regarding what was, you know, the lynching that occurred yesterday. Can you talk about that? And what did you mean by that?
Well, I think that, you know, that we keep forgetting that there is a black economy within the United States, and that we have economic power, and we need to understand not only that we have that economic power, we need to exercise that. If the state of Georgia decides that it doesn't believe in justice, then those individuals that live in that state shouldn't feel safe. And if I don't feel safe, I wouldn't travel to that state, nor would I tell any of my people to go to that state. I wouldn't spend one tourist dollar in that state. And I would tell my people, just like I was telling people the issue going on in New York City with the stop and frisk, because this is about humanity, brother. How many times is somebody going to beat you over your head before you say, ouch? Okay? And so this is about people's humanity. In New York City, the battle that's going on right now is this stop and frisk nonsense. And I've been talking to young brothers and sisters about this, saying, do you think this is normal behavior? Do you think that people in the Upper East Side, where rich white people live at, do you think that they're being stopped and frisked by the police? There have been 560,000 stops and frisks already in New York City. We ain't even finished the year yet. And this is going on in our neighborhood.
Right.
I mean, we should just be in Israel and be like, we like the Palestinians, but somebody, this one brother said to me, he had more respect for the Palestinians, at least they stood up and they fought. So brothers and sisters have to decide for themselves, Solomon, and they have to decide that this behavior that exists, okay, this attitude that exists toward their humanity is unacceptable, and if they're going to say that, I'm not going to accept it. I'm a human being. My life counts for something, okay? And so, therefore, I choose to live in total freedom. People even understand what that means when I say total freedom. If you can wake up in the morning and walk down the street and not even think about what you're going to do, that's what white people do. They can walk down the street and don't think about nothing and not worry about it. You tell me you can walk into certain neighborhoods and not worry about what's going to happen to you. So you don't exist in total freedom. The question is, what are you going to do about it?
That's right. And you've done a lot of organizing in New York around Patrick Dorsman, Timothy Stansberry, and those type of things. So what do you think it's going to take? What do you think it's going to take for us to stop seeing these things happen to our people in the black community? What do you think it's going to take, Maurice?
The engine of any movement is young people, brother. We put in our hard work, Solomon. I know you've been doing great work down in also, but it comes a point in time where we have to train up the young brothers and sisters and let them know that they are empowered to take their lives in their own hands and they can move, get this thing going. The movement is them. It's not us. If people even study history, you study the stuff that went on during the civil rights movement, the older people organized a lot of stuff, but nothing get done until young people got involved. When the young people decided they were going to go to jail because their parents couldn't go to jail down there in the 60s, and they filled up all the jails down there, when SNCC got involved in being in the process, the Black Power movement came out of that whole thing. This was the engine of young brothers and sisters understanding that they had to take control of their lives and move forward with a vision and not looking at their older people as adversaries, but people that can train them up and show them the right way to go. So this is not about an issue of black and white. This is about human issues. This is about sovereign rights. Because everybody in this world doesn't speak about race all the time. But when they go to the UN, they talk about sovereign rights. The same stuff the Palestinians are talking about right now. I have a sovereign right to exist, and so do we. And so we have a sovereign right to exist within this country and in this so-called country that talks about freedom, the right to pursue freedom, the pursuit of happiness in this country. And how is a brother supposed to pursue happiness if you've been stopped and frisked, you've been locked up, you got a record for carrying some particular nonsense, whatever, where you got a record, you got a felony now, you can't get any housing, you can't get any welfare, you can't get a job, you can't get nothing. And the only place you can go is right back to where they had you before, in jail.
Right. It's like, a, it's a, it's a, it's part of the system, right? It's part of the system, and it's functioning. It's functioning the way they wanted to function, and so you know, as you said, our job is to try to you know, get around this system and destroy it, you know. You know, if it's death by a thousand lashes, I mean, that's what we got to do, is just take, you know, continuous shots. But as you know, one of the toughest things to do, Maurice, is to keep people consistent, because sometimes, like, these things happen. I remember, you know, you were out there, you know, with regards to what happened to Sean Bell. You were out there, you know, with Timothy Stansberry, Patrick Dorsman. Yeah. And am I right? A lot of people hop in, you know, when it happens, and then do you see any staying power afterwards? Are people remaining consistent?
You know, the one thing that I think is the problem with any movement is that, you know, we can rile people up. We have great people that can make speeches. We have great people that can make us feel good and feel enthusiastic about things. But the problem and the failure of a lot of these movements is they never ask anybody to do anything. So we get riled up, we get emotional, we get all this stuff, but then the hard work comes and people disappear, because we have to show people that it's not a solution that is overnight. You know, the struggle didn't come overnight, okay? We didn't get to where we were at overnight. And I think when people understand that, and when they see what the promised land is for whatever people's vision of it, whatever that is, people understand that, you know, I want it, for me, it's existing in total freedom. And so when we explain that to people, we say to them, come on, brothers and sisters, this is the way we get it done. This is the process. And we have to look at it long term. Like your sister asked me today, she said to me, you know, talking about the case and saying that, you know, this is ridiculous and I didn't hear anything about it. I looked at the news last night. When I texted you last night, I looked at the news. The news didn't even mention anything about it. I watched all three channels up here in New York City. The news didn't mention a word about it. And I said to myself, well, that's part of propaganda control right there, because first of all, they don't want black people to get upset when they find out they killed them, when they murdered them. So of course they're not going to say anything about it. And so this is why shows like yours are so important, because people have to understand that we have to be able to have outlets to support us being informed.
Right.
You know, like
right.
You one of the first brothers. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. What I was going to say is that I had seen the case with the Scott sisters, right? I was glad you took it up, because I had already been looking at it and talking to some people about it, and then when you started doing something on it, I was encouraged by that. And a lot of people I know, I referred them to listen to even after you did the program, to listen to the information so they can understand the situation, and then people got behind it. So, I mean, we look at this situation tonight, and people say, well, we didn't win with Troy Davis. We did win. The spark got started. People understood and looked at the situation, understood that injustice is alive and well in America, and the only place that it's going to be stomped out is unless you get involved. I mean, we're not going to win every victory, but it's about winning the war.
Right.
And like I tell people, when I was out there filming in the Bronx with Amadou Diallo, and I sat up there and I counted, we filmed it and we counted the shots. And we counted the vestibule and looked at it, and I said, if the people from upstate New York would have came down and saw how he got slaughtered, there was no way they would have let these people go. And when I turned the camera down the street, and these little boys were walking down the street, and I said, this is not a battle about today. This is a battle about the future. Those young brothers walking down the street right there, what life are they going to have if we decide to sit down in our behind and live a life in ease and comfort and without being conscious about what's happening to us?
You're right. And I want to echo the same sentiments to you, is that, you know, you've been doing this thing. How long has Black Men's Been Screaming around? Black Men's Screaming been around us? What, 15 years now? 16 years?
No, they're actually 13 years going on 14 years now. Yeah.
And what is, I mean, if you could tell the listeners, what is Black Men Screaming? Because I think you're right. It's what you're doing is in relationship to it. I know that you're, I mean, I don't have to ask you. I already know that you're going to be having some follow-up shows regarding, you know, this injustice, this legal lynching that occurred last night in Georgia. I know you're going to be having shows, but you're aired in Atlanta. You're aired in other cities as well, beyond New York City.
Denver, Baltimore. Yeah, we're on in a couple of different cities and stuff. Probably six different cities total, and we have, as they say, an estimated audience about 500,000 people. But Solomon has been a guest on the show, and there's always been a tremendous response when Solomon comes on, because people know truth, and they know when they see it, and they know when somebody is genuine, Solomon. So, I called in out of respect for Troy Davis, but also out of respect and love for you, because I want to support what you're doing at the same time. And I mean, I'm an older brother, and maybe I just want to impart to these young brothers and sisters out here, we don't look down on y'all. We want to educate you. We want to inform you. We want you to take the reins. I don't have a problem with empowering you, okay? I remember when I was your age and I felt disenfranchised. I felt that nobody was listening to me, and I felt that there was nothing to do. And then a brother took me by the side and started sharing with me the information about who I was. When I got that self-knowledge about who I was and the great things that we've done in this world and the great things that we're continually doing, then I felt empowered. The same words that came out of my mother and my father's mouth, it said to me that when you get your college degree, you don't leave the community, but you stay there and you fight. You stay there and you work on behalf of those people that don't have a voice or whatever. And people have forgotten that if we can't get justice in the courts, we can get it in the streets. We can get it in the streets, because that is today's courthouse. This country has to come to a realization that the economic, political, and social pressure that they're putting on communities of color is not going to take too much longer before a situation in England is out. This is not me saying this. This is experts around this country that are looking at the situation and saying if they get any worse, there's going to be explosion in this country. And people need to come to the realization that they cannot keep doing this crap and think there'll be no reaction. And if you lay dormant, if you sit there and care about anything or whatever, there will be another one. That's guaranteed.
You're right. You're right. There's going to be, exactly. You're right. Because you're right. Morris, I want to keep you on the line. There's another caller, but I want to keep you on the line. And I think it would be good to have you on the show to continue to facilitate this dialogue with us as we have other folks come on. So I want to welcome this this person on from the 762. You're on the show with Andrea, myself, and Maurice Carver from Black Men Screaming. Do you have any comments, questions regarding the travesty of injustice that occurred last night? Hello? 762, you're on the air. I guess they maybe got cold feet. I guess they had cold feet. They realized they were on with a celebrity, with Maurice Carver.
I don't know about that, brother, but hey, there was something I was thinking about, what you said about the war. I was thinking about a comment, a quotation that James Baldwin said. He said something, it's not the world that was my person, because what the world does to you, if the world does it to you long enough, and effective enough, you begin to do it to yourself. And so and you say, well, what do I mean by that comment? Well, part of it is what I was thinking about with Troy Davis. I was thinking about the whole situation with the brothers and sisters that were involved in testifying. I'm not putting them down there. But one of the, I'm not getting to this whole snitching thing. But when we decide to be a witness, we have to be clear and sure about what we're talking about. Because when you're dealing with a situation like this, it cost the brother his life. People had to recant on what they testified about. They were pressured. They were handled. People can say the mail and stuff like that. We did our piece originally. We acknowledged the value of the life of that police officer. Every life has value. And I express my condolence not only to the Davis family, but to the McPhail family also, because they lost a loved one. But when we decide that we're going to take a person's life, we got to be damn sure we're right. And if the Supreme Court could take the time to talk about, to take cases for Walmart, where their class action lawsuits they're dismissing of being discriminated against, and they can dismiss that, and they can take up cases where they Citizens versus Citizen United, okay, where they can give corporations the ability to act as an individual and stuff. And pollute the political system with millions and millions of dollars from unknown donors and stuff. But yet we couldn't take the time to seek justice and show that this brother's life had some type of value.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. I couldn't agree with you more. Without a doubt, I could not agree with you more. What do you? I want to ask you a question, Maurice. I've seen today the mother of Officer McPhail.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and so you know, she was saying today, you know, that you know, she's glad it's over. But you know, before, you know, just a couple of days ago, she was, you know, very much in favor. She was pushing. She thought that, you know, that Troy Davis was getting his just due. That he was the one. And you brought up something, and I totally, you know, feel what you're saying in terms of that your heart goes out to the family of the McPhail family, because they lost a loved one as well. But my question to you, that if there's all this stuff, because I mean, she's heard the stuff, she must have, you know, I know I can't speak for her, but she's heard the fact that seven of the nine folks, you know, recanted, and then five of them were said that they were coerced by the police. Does it make it any easier? You know, is it going to make it any easier for her to find solace, for her to find comfort, knowing that, or even having just a sliver of doubt that the actual murderer of her son is still out there? You know, to me, that should be something that would be looming over my head, and you know, that I wouldn't dare want to take a chance of having the wrong person killed. Because once that happens, you know, if the real killer is out there, you know, of your son, you know, there's no chance of him being brought to justice. When I mean brought to justice, I mean, you know, being incarcerated for the rest of your life. I mean, I think that's a much tougher sentence than actual death. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, the fact that she's really staying pretty steadfast with her belief that Troy did it, and also like saying things that she's glad it's over, and you know, there's a certain amount of relief that I just kind of find it airy that there's, you know, that you can get kind of any kind of relief.
Well, I don't find it surprising because I'm looking at, you know, we have to look at who's surrounding her and what she's listening to. You have people that are telling her that, you know, all of this stuff. The former DA made a comment in the newspaper the other day that he said this is manufactured doubt. Okay, so this there was no doubt in his mind. This is manufactured doubt. All these hundreds of thousands of people, all these millions of people around the world that are looking at this case, all of these individual people across the spectrum, black and white or whatever, saying to you that, hey, we think that there's something wrong here and we need to take a second look. But people have to decide for themselves what justice is. And I can't look into her individual heart and know what's been. And I would hope that it wasn't hate that motivated that, or hate or revenge. But I do have to at least say for her, on behalf of around her, what's circling her, the police, and all the other people that are in support of this particular action. So obviously, if I was in a camp, I might believe the same thing. Okay, so there probably was no doubt in her mind, based on the information being provided to her.
Right.
So I mean, I'm not surprised by that. But the thing is though, what I am surprised about is that you have all of these quote unquote checks and balances that exist within this quote unquote fair and balanced system, that your common sense or even, you know, care wasn't really put into effect here. The people didn't even care to even think about even the possibility, okay? They were, and that's the thing that makes me wonder, and it makes me think about another Supreme Court decision where they said that there's no way they're going to respect the rights of a black man.
You're right.
Nobody has, exactly.
You're right. You're right.
There's another Supreme Court that said that.
Yeah,
so
I'm not
surprised by anything. As I said before, we're looking at the challenge of the future. We're looking at, this is just a sound shot in the battle for how we're going to exist within our communities and how we're going to exist in this country. And people have to understand now that it doesn't stop today. He's been his voice has been silenced. But what about your voice? Okay. And look at it from the perspective that I look at it. Like I said before, this is a generational thing. We have to decide if we're willing to stand up and fight. Okay, and
right.
That's the question I have for people. Are we willing to fight?
Right.
Are we willing to turn our back upon the ease and comfort and respectability that we can get from working in this country, for corporate America? Okay. Are we willing to go back into for the sake of our brethren and go and suffer with them and to toil with them and to endure insult with them, to undergo outrage with them, to lift up our voice on their behalf, to speak and to write in for their vindication and struggle in their ranks for emancipation, brother?
You're right. We got another call. Hopefully this one is not too shy to speak to you. Caller, you're on Your World News. Do you have any questions or comments? You're on with Maurice Carver from Black Men Screaming. Anything regarding Troy Davis or the injustice around this so-called justice system in America?
Although unfortunate what happened to Troy Davis, Solomon, no, I don't have any comment. I just tuned into the program and I was just listening.
Okay. All right. Thank you for tuning in. None of that. Thank you. And
no worries.
That's fine. Yeah. All right.
No worries.
So
one of the things that I was looking at and I was thinking about some of the stuff that you were talking about with the prison industrial complex, whatever. I don't know if you've been following Michelle Alexander, Professor Michelle
yes.
Alexander, and her
yes,
book.
The New Jim Crow.
The New Jim Crow, exactly. Matter of fact, when I called you, my show was actually on. You were airing a segment of the speeches she gave and how she outlaid the best laid plans. And then another thing that I mentioned to you before, and I think the people that are out there should kind of look at it, because there's an economic incentive to imprison you, to lock you up or whatever. And I'm not talking about the GEO group, and I'm not talking about Correctional Corporation of America, even though those are excellent points that you made, Solomon. I'm talking about these localities, these principalities or whatever, these counties or whatever, to get money from federal government. The American Violet is an excellent movie that should be required for every black person to look at.
Very
so they
good
can
movie.
Kind of see the reality of what happens. It was a good movie. It didn't get the exposure because people didn't want you to be informed. So this is why people need to look at that stuff, because that's a true story. As a matter of fact, there's clips from the sister up on YouTube where she's talking about this stuff. But I mean, if I could encourage anybody out there, all you college students who have the time or whatever, you go out, you rent it to any person, black, white, or whatever. Watch American Violent, and you see the stuff that's been going on, and if you can't be changed by what you saw there, then you're dead inside.
You're right. I did see that movie, and what's interesting, Maurice, is that's a movie. I mean, that's an excellent movie, and you had the likes of Alfred Woodward that was in that movie. You had Charles Dutton in that movie, and it got very little play on the big screen. I mean, it was buried. I mean, I didn't even see it in the movie theater. I mean, some folks said it was, they're like, yeah, it was in the movie theater. It was there for like a week, and I don't even remember it in the movie. I had to get it on, I had to rent the DVD to watch it. But yeah, it was an excellent movie. It broke down. I mean, it broke down the raids of these housing projects. It broke down the impact of the prosecutor. I mean, it was a powerful, powerful movie. Yeah, you're right. That is a powerful piece, because I think that, the arts, and in this case, film has the ability, when it's done right, has the ability to serve as a real tool for education, especially with this younger generation that is so, I mean, they're bombarded by mass media all the time. And most of the time it's mass media that is, polluting their minds, but, so this is one of those things that, yeah, I second your sentiment that it's definitely one of those must-see, dramas that, it almost reads like a documentary. And I think it was based on a true story, wasn't it?
It was based on a true story, exactly. And I think that that's the problem with a lot of people is that people think of these things. Because, you know, I listen to people, and I remember when Reagan started his nonsense about let's get tough on crime and all this type of stuff, and then he went out and manufactured the images of what was going on within the black community, showing these crack babies and all this stuff like that, and purporting an image of what is black life within the community. So, of course, people looking at that would say, well, we should lock that up because we can't have that existing in this country. We can't have that. But yet, the bottom line is, like one of the sisters has said, I don't see black people in white neighborhoods selling crack and cocaine enough. So what does that mean? So what that means is where are the laws being enforced? Because majority of people that got locked up in New York City, for example, right, they just stopped in prison, got arrested for small amounts of marijuana. And I'm endorsing marijuana. It's not what I'm endorsing. But the bottom line is, you think black people smoke any less marijuana than white people? You think white people, but the interdictions, the things that are going on in your community. The police are stopping you in your community. They're not going to white communities and doing that because white people wouldn't tolerate it. In New York, we have, I don't know about what goes on down there, Solomon, but in New York, they have what they call Roundup Wednesday. Check that out. In New York, they call it Roundup Wednesday. You know why? Because they round up all the young people. And then one of my brothers, he had to go down to the police station, was telling me how the families were down there fighting to see their kids. They had it for two or three days and found out through a source that they were down there, and the kids wasn't allowed to get their calls and stuff, and parents are fighting to just even just get a word with their own children and stuff. And this kind of nonsense happens all the time. You know, organizations that I've been working with have been trying to fight against this situation, but, you know, the bottom line is that people don't understand that without the individuals deciding that this is unacceptable, nothing is going to change.
Right. I mean, you think it's going to take a social revolution? I mean, I was having this conversation, you know, today with some folks, and I think that's what it's going to take. I mean, automatically, people think when you say, you know, social revolution, people think that, you know, they automatically think violence, but, you know, social revolution don't have to necessarily be violent. But, you know, but Maurice, one of the things is, like, you know, people, if you or I were to say that, it's going to take a social revolution. If we were to say this on mainstream, you know, corporate TV,
locked up.
I mean, they would run with that, like, yo, you know what I'm saying? We got to send the feds to their house, yo, lock him up, this, that, and the other. But what's interesting is, you know, these folks that are not too far from you on Wall Street, they can cause all kind of economic terrorism that can send, you know, that can send people to commit suicide because they lost their house, and therefore they lost their wife or their husband and this, that, and the other. All kinds of economic terrorism, you know, through what happened, you know, when the bubble burst and the subprime mortgage crisis, and it wasn't a crisis, it was planned that way. You know, these folks knew exactly what they were doing, that these adjusted rate mortgages were going to blow up and so forth. And you know, but they don't even listen. The Bernie Madoffs, they are far and few between. Most of them get off scot-free. They're not doing any jail time.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people don't even realize that the Obama administration, along with one of these attorney generals, are trying to work out a deal with these banks to kind of settle all these cases in one big thing. The Obama administration has asked for something like $20 billion. A lot of the banks have scoffed at that. But you have a few people that are holding out, like the Attorney General in New York and then the one in Nevada. The Attorney General in New York is Eric Schneiderman, and he said that he couldn't do that to the individual people that suffered underneath the greed and the corruption of these banks, and that these people need to go to jail. See, and that's the problem. We're busy locking up people for a little bit of reefer, but you got people on Wall Street that are destroying lives. You're talking about over the last, since 2008, you're talking about 6 million people that have been foreclosed on. This is not my number. This is the government's number and stuff. And then we look at the communities that have been devastated. They're all communities of color or whatever. And then to make it even worse, you're going to put the fox in charge of the handout by allowing the banks to be able to give these people these new loans. And I personally know people that should have never been put into these adjusted rate mortgages, that should have qualified for fixed rate mortgages, and they were given that. Okay? And this is systemic within communities of color. even Charles Schumer, who's a senator from New York, did a study in Queens where he showed that white people with the same income in credit rating were given fixed rates versus people with the same income in credentials were given a variable rate or whatever. And a lot of people, unfortunately, were pushed toward the predatory lenders and stuff. So this is systemic. And one of the things you talked about on my show that I thought was really excellent was the Hempstead, New York. Hempstead, New York is a county in Long Island where the majority black people, and they didn't like what Citibank was doing there refinancing these mortgages in the area. So they pulled out their money from Citibank and told them why they were doing it. The county took out $14 million and said, we're not doing business with you because the way you're treating communities of color in our community is wrong. And this is the thing that they understand. If they don't recognize your blackness, they simply recognize the green. And this is the
right.
stuff that I'm
You're
talking
right.
about.
You're right. And one of you know, it was just interesting. One of the folks in our interactive chat, you know, he brought up a good point. And I believe, you know, Black Ops, you know, whoever you are, you know, he says, you know, marching and protesting alone is certainly not going to change anything. You know, I agree. I don't think, you know, I don't think Maurice thinks that as well. I totally agree. Marching and protest. We have to be organized, and especially starting with our community, the black community. We got to be organized, and we have to be politically organized, and we have to understand that politics is not Democrat or Republican. It's everything you can or cannot do in your community. And what happened last night, that was political. That had politics written all over it. I mean, it had a lot of things mm-hmm. written all over it. And so until we're you know more you know politically organized, you're right. It's we're going to see these things continue to happen. I mean, you look at, for instance, you know, and I happen to disagree with most of their standpoints on things, and that's, you know, the American Jewish community, especially in regards to Israel. But you look at, I mean, the, you know, the Democrats and Republicans, they tap dance every election cycle at the AIPAC meeting, you know.
Yeah, that's most
in regards to public affairs.
In America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They're organized, collective money, this, that, and the other, tap dance. They don't give a damn who's in office, Democrat or Republican. They're like, yo, you know, we're taken care of. Our interests are taken care of. Maurice, what's it going to take for us to get there? Because it's happened in the past. It's not like it's unprecedented. I mean, we had a national black political party, you know, back in the 70s. We had conventions like the one in Gary, Indiana, and as well as the
right.
you know, Black Power, conference, you know, New Jersey. So what's it going to take for us to get back there, especially in this era where so many people think that we are living in a post so-called racial or racist environment here in America?
Well, let's kind of talk about. Let's get historical for a second, and I want to bring up a movie that most people didn't think would just look at it as being funny, but I thought there was something interesting comment in there, and you could have gleaned something from it. If people remember the movie, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, and there was a point where they were looking for this particular activist or whatever, and they found him in this place, and you know there was nobody in the place with him, and they asked him, say, hey, what happened to the revolution? And he said, they all got jobs, man. They all got jobs. So people bought it, and I'm not mad at people because I understand that you want to be able to have that dream, that American dream, that white picket fence, that house or whatever, and you want to be able to take care of your family and stuff. But the question you have to ask yourself is, what cost? What cost is that? Okay? Because when people decided that that was the thing to get, now you see that they can take that away from you anytime they want.
Right.
You got it, now you ain't got it no more. You ain't got a job, and you can't even take care of yourself, and your unemployment is run out. I have friends that have the W2 degree, and they're not working, haven't worked in 3 years. So, I mean, the thing is, and again, I ask the question, what is the solution? You know, first of all,
yeah.
they have to become what? They have to become conscious. But see, this is the frightening thing about being conscious. James Baldwin said something I thought was very interesting about that. It's about being conscious and stuff. And he said to be black in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be enraged almost all the time.
That's right. That's right. I can feel that. I can feel that. So it's like I'm walking on the street and I say to you, what you heard before, Maurice, which is kind of, you know, you've heard before, especially with the name of your show. You know, mm-hmm. What do you say to that black person that comes up to you, like Maurice Carver, man? Yo, I heard your show, man. Why are you always so mad, man? Why are you always so mad? What's your response to them?
Well, I've heard that comment several times, and why the name of the show, and I've been told, you know, the show won't make any money because it's offensive and all this and all that. But I said I wanted to offend you. I didn't create that name just out of shock value or whatever. I feel, I mean, you know, I remember when I used to watch all of these news reports and these things going on, and I used to see that our point of view was never there. There was never anybody, and when they did find somebody, they could find the most ignorant person to be able to speak on them behalf of representing our groups and stuff. And so I felt, I said, we have to scream to be heard. We have to scream to be heard because as I said before, the image of a black man, the devil has a better image than a black man. The devil has a better image, okay? You know, and I don't think that people really understand that. And I think that when you go back to historical stuff, and people say, oh, historical was born and all that, but it's based in who you are. It was based in who you are. I mean, our history. I'm not talking about their history. Now I'm talking about our real history.
Right.
And when you go back and you look at that type of stuff, man, you can't help. When you start talking about Mali and Songhai and Ghana and stuff, and you
yeah,
start talking about
right.
these things that these countries, and your ancestors came from there.
You
have to understand who you are. When you get rooted and grounded in truth, brother, they can't do nothing to you because you know who you are. And so that's the problem that's going on now. And this is where the deception of not all hip-hop now, the deception of hip-hop is because people, they put an image out there, subtly. That's the image. Nowadays, when I was coming up, you could be a nerd, you could be, you know, a book guy, you know, you could be a basketball player, you could be all different types of things. Now everybody has to be a thug. Okay? There is no diversity in who you are. You have to be that thug, and you have to play that particular role or whatever. And see, the problem I have with that is that this they're pouring all of this stuff into our young people. And where is the counterculture to that? Where's other stuff that we're pouring into them, that we're breathing into them, that we're putting into them to let them know that this is not who you are. And when people don't understand that, they don't function right. Because it's just like I create a fan, right? Okay, we know what the purpose of a fan is, right? It's a cool
right.
wall.
Yes.
But if I put a fan and I drop it in the tub with me, what's that going to do? That ain't the purpose
right.
of a fan. It'll electrocute me and kill me. So the purpose. So people have to understand what their purpose is. You know, I don't know. There's a brother up here in New York City. His name is now it just went out of my head. Bill Noble. He has like one of the longest. He has the longest running black talk show in America. Most people don't even know. It's called Like It Is. And this brother had a treasure trove of material and information about our history. He just had a stroke and as far as I know, he's still in the hospital. He's not doing well. And the sad part about what I'm talking about is that we want that legacy to continue. All of that material, all of that stuff that's out there that can inform people or whatever, that can show them our history. I mean, I went to look at stuff when I saw when Malcolm was young and he was out in Los Angeles fighting those brothers that got shot by the police out there. I'm talking about real footage with listening to him talking and stuff and listening to the young brothers and sisters talking about their struggles or whatever. And when you look at that, it is frightening because the economic and political conditions are no different. They're no different. On one of the shows we just talked about, 33% of blacks in 2009 had no wealth. 33% of black people had no wealth in 2009. They had zero. That means you
right.
ain't even got a dollar to your name.
Right.
And 31%
right.
of their parents were sick. Because so whatever wealth the black people had, which you already talked about, Solomon, was in their homes, got taken. So now you have nothing. And
right.
what happens to people that don't have any hope, brother? Hope deferred makes the
yeah.
heart sick.
You're right, man. You're right. I mean, it's I mean, you know, matter of fact, I'm glad that you brought that. I want to play this real quick, and I want to get your comment on the other end. I want to play this clip from Glenn Ford, and it's regarding what you just said, and I want to get your feedback on the other end.
The two devastating recessions of the last decade have had catastrophic effects on black economic prospects. Yet, despite the monstrous setbacks of recent years and the general failure to bridge the racial wage and wealth gap over the last three decades, there still exists a strong current of black political thought that insists African Americans can pull themselves and the rest of the race up by their financial bootstraps through hard work and pooling of collective resources. Some of these arguments are unashamedly black capitalist. Others preach a brand of communal partnerships among black entrepreneurs and consumers that attempts to make the entire black community a kind of capitalist engine of self-help. What binds the variations on the bootstrap theme together is an essential refusal to challenge the capitalist system. The belief is that black buying power or race-based investment schemes will allow black folks to rise from the bottom of the American economic barrel. Implicit in this line of thinking is the notion that blacks are at the bottom because they have not been trying hard enough to move up, which is also the assumption of white racists, whether they call themselves conservatives or liberals. The most fatal flaw in the black capitalist worldview is the assumption that black people actually have the wealth and discretionary income to build an internal economy that could insulate them from the general capitalist crisis. We no different, because all the data tell us that black household income is stuck at the same level relative to whites as back in 1979, and black comparative wealth was steadily eroding even before the last decade's recessions. And we know that black wealth has been further diminished relative to whites in the ongoing housing meltdown, in which blacks are twice as likely to face foreclosure. And we know that blacks, a majority of whom are renters, bear the brunt of the dislocations caused by rampant gentrification, which in some urban areas forces families to spend more than half their income on rent. Simply put, there ain't no damn money for these bootstrap capitalism dreams, and there never was. There was never the possibility of building a black General Motors, and now General Motors requires billions of dollars in federal infusions to survive. What a great distraction this nonsense about bootstrap racial upward mobility has been. So much time wasted and misdirected dreams over the generations. Worse than that, the bootstraps mythology, sometimes under the shorthand do for self, implicitly or explicitly urges black people to forego making demands of government, as if that amounts to begging the white man for something. This attitude surrenders all black claims to any of the society's resources except those we currently hold in our own pockets, which is the equivalent of social death. President Obama also warns blacks to expect no redress from their government. At a recent press conference, he once again urged blacks to be patient, that when the economy grows, everybody will be swept up into that virtuous circle. It never happened before, and it never will. Blacks need to do for self, but not as aspiring capitalists. We have always made our greatest progress in political struggle. That is the promised land that we make together. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Maurice, your feedback on that? Comment?
Well, Brother Glenn Ford doesn't leave any room for any doubt in what he meant. What was there?
You're right.
Well, you know, I mean, I understand what the point the brother is talking about, and I agree. I think my thinking is that there needs to be a combination of both. I think that there needs to be an issue of self-help. I think that we need to kind of look internally within ourselves. A lot of us are not going to be employed by corporate America, especially all those brothers and sisters that have been in prison and they're coming out of prison. Corporate America is not going to hire you. I don't care if they do have a $9,000 tax abatement and they give these corporations and stuff to bring you on. They're not going to do it. So the bottom line is, how do we help those brothers and how do we help ourselves? Well, if we create organizations and things for our community, we find those needs, things over from our community, and we start a business to do that. I'm talking about circulating money within our own community to keep us working. But also we have to look at the government as a whole, because what Brother Glenn Ford is talking about is that we, regardless of what our economic condition is, we're still paying taxes. And someone is benefiting from those taxes. Like that $60 billion in U.S. war funds that we sent over there, it got wasted that they can't even find. Or the secret money that they gave these banks. I keep talking about the TARP money and stuff. There was another amount of money that they gave TARP, but then something like $650 trillion that they gave these banks again, without even mentioning it to the American public, was kept secret or whatever. So this is your and my money that we're talking about. This is your and our money and stuff. And so we need to, just like a brother asked, I was doing a Philadelphia radio show. And I'm going to mention somebody that a lot of people might not like, and I'm going to talk about Al Sharpton real quick for a second. And the brother said to me, he thought that Al Sharpton was a sellout or whatever. I said, let me tell you something, brother. I believe in the same philosophy that was going on with Malcolm and Martin. He said, what do you mean by that? I said that Malcolm was on the outside agitating and getting things done. And he said, if y'all don't deal with Martin, you're going to have to deal with me. And so at least we have somebody at the table with Reverend Al. I might not always agree with what his political philosophies are, but I never challenge what his heart is. I personally know him, and I know he has a love for black people. I don't agree with all of his plans, but I understand that we need to be pushing on both fronts. We need to have somebody saying that, hey, we need to be allocating these resources to these communities. Unfortunately, the Congressional Black Caucus has shown us that they haven't always been as responsive as we would like them to be, and they also have shown the devastation of our communities with all of these job fairs going around here, seeing thousands and thousands of people standing out there for hours or whatever. But we're talking about unemployment rates within certain communities that are 16 to 25%, and the estimated unemployment rate within New York City is 33%. What do you say to that? And these numbers are devastating. The sister did an excellent report that she talked about economic troubles that exist within all of the major cities where black people live at. And she showed that before unemployment was somewhere around like 5-6% in a lot of these communities, and it is almost tripled. And yet we're not supposed to sit here and be quiet and not to agitate and just hope that maybe just down the road something will happen. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Right. I'm gonna have to leave it at that with you. The last comment. I want to welcome you back on. If maybe we can talk off air to try to find a time for you to come on in a couple weeks, and we can extend that conversation. We can talk about our so-called black political leaders. I have a variant, as you know. You know my opinions on Al Sharpton, and I believe he has done some good work in the past. He definitely has done some good work in the past. I just question his how effective he can be when his allegiance right now is with the he's on the Obama payroll, just like even last night, man, he was Big Boy was talking, and it was like I'm not gonna say it was a joke. I'm not saying he took it seriously, but he said something like, Big Boy? I was just like really, man, do you really need to say that? But that's the least of my, critique of Reverend Al these days. I think that, he's become very, very corporate-minded. I'll give you, Maurice, props over them. I think, as you know, some of our most heralded, some of our most productive community activists and leaders are folks like yourself that are doing tremendous work day in and day out with their shows. You don't get paid for it. You do it because you care about black people. You care about change. And because of that, that's why, individuals like yourself are marginalized and kept off of, because they can't have you come on to bring black men screaming onto a mainstream platform and talking about the things that you do in such an honest manner. They can't do it. You've had the opportunity to sell out you know, many times. They've come and thrown money at you, you know, certain groups,
yeah,
organizations have thrown money, and you've turned it down. I know these stories behind, you know, behind the man. You know, I know these stories. But for those folks that are listening, how can they access you, folks that are not living in one of the areas where Black Men Screaming is syndicated? How can they watch Black Men Screaming online?
Well, they can certainly go to YouTube, and if you look up BMS TV, you'll be able to find videos of the show up there. And you can find us on, I don't do a lot of Twitter stuff. And I just barely do anything on Facebook because I know how you and me feel about Facebook. But I do have a page up there only because, you know, people press me on it and stuff. But, you know, I would really strongly suggest that if you want to see anything that we're doing, if you look up BMS TV or just Google Black Men Screaming, you're going to find our page up there. We have like 100 something videos that's up there. And you might even find some with Solomon in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we're gonna have you on, in 2 or 3 weeks. That's for sure. This has been too good, and it's too long. This is not the first time you've been on the show, but it's been this has been too long. I really enjoyed this, and I want to give you you know, the last word. Any last words that you have you know, for you know, Troy Davis and all the other Troy Davises that are out there right now that are you know, wrongfully convicted, whether they're facing, you know, the death penalty or not. You know, do you have any, you know, last words for them, and also, you know, and equally as important, last words for folks listening that might need some motivation to fight on and what they need to
do. I'll leave them with the quotations I love so much that Dr. King said when he was in the Birmingham jail. He said, human rights never rolls in the wheels of inevitability, but they come with men and women willing to be tireless co-workers with God. Without this, time itself becomes an ally of the forces of stagnation. And we can't afford to be idle or stagnant because the future is waiting on us.
All right. That's good enough for me. I'll talk to you later, and you know, on behalf of Andrea Zamudio and everyone else with Your World News, I want to thank you for coming on, Maurice. I mean, you really livened up the show. This was totally unexpected to have you call in, but I appreciate it. So thank you so much. And and Troy Davis, I know you're some way up there looking and hearing all the different voices of people worldwide, not just throughout the country, but worldwide, who are, you know, are mourning your passing today. And I'll let you know that we won't ever stop mourning you, but most importantly, we won't ever stop continuing the fight that you started, that the courageousness that you showed, even to the last minute and second that those scumbags took your life. You know, and yeah, may God, Allah, Buddha, whoever, have mercy on their souls, because it was wrong what they did to you. But we're going to continue to fight on. And as you said, they can take your body, but they cannot take your spirit. Your spirit lives on in all of us. And Maurice Carver is Troy Davis, and I'm Troy Davis, and Andrea Zamudio is Troy Davis. We are Troy Davis. All right, take care.